Okay, welcome back to this episode of Radio Naira program on Know Your Dharma. And remember, our guests are a wonderful couple, young couple from UK, Ranjan Vasudevan and Sonali Shukla. So Ranjan, please tell us about your point of view on the aesthetic aspects of Dharma, that is rituals, art forms and music.
Yeah, this is something very dear to my heart because I think before I was interested in Dharma as such, I was a musician and an artist. You know, that was my, I think, first calling in life, if you like, and I'm still very much immersed in music. One thing I think that benefits mentioning in the context of ritual, for example, is that ritual isn't only a means to an end of getting something. You know, people often do it for, I want this, I want my good marks in an exam or something. You know, ritual is also a way of appreciating beauty in a more fundamental sense to me. And one thing I really sense this, if you go to a temple and you see the care with which, for example, the deity is decorated, you know, the real detail that is afforded to this, you know, it's you know, showing love for beauty in a kind of completely abstract way, you know, imagining the deity as the supreme being that pervades everything and saying, you know, it's almost seems meaningless. How can I do something beautiful for the source of all beauty? But there's something really beautiful about that concept as well. So, you know, that itself is an art form. Also, the way that rituals are done, for example, the structure of rituals, the mudras, you know, people will see in Bharatanatyam and forms of dance, obviously people use mudras there, but people may not know that in pujas as well, to purify the items that you offer to the deity or to kind of, offer certain services, upacharas, to the deity, which you don't have, they will use mudras. And to feed the deity, they will use another mudra that looks like you're feeding a child. So all these things, I think, are not just ritual, but they're also aesthetic, and they're also to be appreciated for their own
beautiful, wonderful.
And I think it extends into art forms and music as well. I mean, one thing I will say very carefully is I don't think that we have a monopoly on the art forms that have come from Dharma. So I think that, for example, Carnatic music, Hindustani music, Bharatanatyam, I think is for the whole world. I certainly would not I'm not ever trying to make any kind of exclusivity claim for in the same way that I, you know, I feel like I can enjoy the music of Bach, his, you know, beautiful meditations on Christ or whatever. I think that similarly, the art forms of India are for the world. But I think it's very again, it encapsulates so much about our mythology, our philosophy, if we can actually just sometimes delve into these art forms. And I think this is something that was very common to Sonali and I when we met, actually, an interest in art. I don't know if Sonali, you wanted to talk about that any further.
Yeah. So I learned Bharatanatyam as a child, and it's something that I picked up again when I was doing my PhD at Vanderbilt University. And I was really lucky there. My dance teacher, she ran a class as part of the university's dance program. So it was only 1 hour a week. And I felt like I could afford to spend 1 hour a week. And at first I said, well, you know, this is good because I, you know, it's a bit of exercise. It's a bit of, you know, doing something other than my studies. But I think the beauty of it was that it also gave me an hour of, you know, learning about culture and spirituality. You know, so that hour, at least a minimum of an hour that I would devote to dance a week, became a time for me to say, oh, you know, we're doing this piece that's talking about the, you know, a devotee feeling forsaken by God, or, you know, even more simply, you know, the antics of Krishna as a young child. But it, you know, through the art form, it was an opportunity to kind of delve deeper into the philosophy, into the broader themes that ran across that. And I think, when Ranjan and I first met, we were both researchers at Penn State, and everyone that we met said, oh, you know, we remember you because you asked about what the music and dance opportunities were at the university. And that's something we don't get from most science researchers, you know, that that kind of broad outlook of what's available. That was something that we definitely had in common early on. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think in my case, it was music. So I grew up playing Western violin, piano, guitar as well, playing some rock music initially. And then I diversified into Carnatic music, which, as you know, has a tremendous corpus of compositions with Hindu themes and philosophical themes. And I think one thing about music of any kind is when you really get to immerse yourself in it, it's this concept of nada brahman, you know, that people may be familiar with, this idea that sound itself is, it gives you an experience of a spiritual reality beyond what any words can try to express. Whatever you try to explain, sometimes just listening to a beautiful sound says all the words you need to without saying anything, right? And I think that's something that I really felt from immersion in music. You know, I think when Sonali and I met, you know, we were both new in Penn State. I was very lucky to find a group of musicians who shared my love of music, and Sonali also would come along to that the group of musicians when we'd have regular sessions. And I think, you know, it's dharma in a kind of peripheral sense, but in a related sense, intricately linked towards themes and topics of dharma, of course.
Yeah, we had a lecture in my KYD series here by a dancer. Dance is a healer. And you can find that video of that on the website. And we had a Sangeet group at Duke also perform. That's a Carnatic music group. And both these videos can be found, I think, on their website. And we also had, you know, the temple art is also very important when you mentioned art. And so we had a beautiful lecture. Unfortunately, we don't have a video of the recording of that, but by a former docent of a museum, Hindu temple art and architecture. What a wonderful lecture that was organized. So that leads us to the previous question of Ranjan. Please tell us about your view on appreciating the philosophy of Hinduism through a daily contemplative discipline.
So I think, as I might have touched upon in a previous question, I was drawn to ritual in a way that perhaps was unusual for other people of my peer group. So I think, you know, there is a lot of tremendously rich philosophy that we have in Hinduism. But my question always was, how do we internalize this? Is it enough to read a text, you know, X number of times? But is there, in the same way that we talk about music being experiencing a truth which is beyond words, is there something that we can do in our daily lives that helps us bit by bit appreciate some of these truths in a way that is beyond just reading a book? And I think for me, after my Upanayana Samskara, I really found the ritual of Sandhya Vandana, so the meditation on the Gayatri Mantra in the morning and evening, I found that very valuable for some of the reasons mentioned. It is a time to sort of shut out the hubbub of whatever is happening during the day. You know, whatever WhatsApp messages you're getting, whatever is happening in the news, whatever work stress you have. You know, we have two kids that leads to its own share of stress as well. But, you know, luckily we have some time for a bit of contemplation like this. And it, you know, one thing that's very popular nowadays is yoga and meditation. And I think one thing that people may not realize is some of these rituals are basically, they include aspects of yoga. They are exactly meditative rituals. And I think, you know, if in the Sandhya Vandana ritual, for example, one of the things one does after meditating on the Gayatri Mantra is you say Asavaditya Brahma, which is realizing that the sun is the same, you know, that supreme being you are perceiving through the light of the sun, and also that supreme being is what pervades you. It's just a daily reminder of how can I be better? How can I perceive that divinity? It's a correction mechanism. You know, we might have read it, the book, a million times, but it's a daily contemplation on those themes that goes beyond knowing the truths intellectually, I think.
Very good. And so, you know, that reminds me of the interpretation of Bhagavad Gita by Ekanath Ishwaran. The title itself is Bhagavad Gita in daily living. It's a three volume set, six chapter each is a separate volume.
Yes.
And I also should mention that in our KYD series, we had a series of four lectures by Acharya Vivek of Chinmaya Mission. And the title we had chosen for those lectures is Dharma in Daily Living.
Yes.
So exactly that this is not a dry philosophy, but you can inculcate in your daily life these ideas.
Yeah.
So, at this point now, I would ask Sonali, would you like to recite your favorite prayer for the audience?
One question. There was one other little bit that we were going to talk about, but for Sonali, in regards to the daily discipline, is it okay to talk about that?
Yeah, go ahead. I didn't understand. What was it that
there was something we do daily.
Oh, I think so this
wonderful. Yeah.
It actually came up during the pandemic. When we were homebound with a four-year-old bouncing off the walls, we started to do, I'll let Ranjan explain the ritual.
So during the wedding ceremony, so the samskara of the Vivaha Samskara, everyone is familiar with the concept of the fire that is at the center of the wedding ceremony. And that Agni is symbolic of our partnership from that time onwards. We call it the Grihya Agni, right? And one ritual—
Witness, right? Sakshi, Agni Sakshi.
And specifically the fire that we raise at the wedding for a couple becomes a symbol of their union. One ritual that's been prescribed by the sutrakaras, the writers of the ritual manuals, is that the couple should actually maintain this fire for the rest of their life every day with an offering in the morning and the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And this is called opasana. It's a very, very simple ritual, but again, it's kind of has a philosophical aspect behind it, because the husband cannot do this without the wife. The wife has to hand the husband a handful of rice, and the husband says, "Is it okay for me to sacrifice, to offer this?" And she says, "I give you permission." So it's a symbol from the very beginning of the marriage, that on the first time they do it is at their wedding. And then technically it's continued after that. And we decided to reestablish not a daily discipline, but a once weekly discipline of doing this ritual of opasana. I don't know what was your experience of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a nice reminder. One, you know, there's the beauty of doing the ritual itself, right? You know, it adds a bit of routine and stability, particularly in the, you know, completely unrecognizable world of 2020. But I think also it's a weekly reminder for us that, you know, the things that we want to do in life are joint effort, and that, you know, the things that we want to do both for ourselves individually and for our children and for ourselves as a couple, you know, requires us to work together as a team. And I think that's, it's beautiful to find that in the ancient rituals.
The marriage ceremony, the rituals vary from all over the place, right? So this particular one, is it part of Laja Home, at the beginning of Laja Home, is it?
It's actually at the very end of the ceremony. Once you've done the Laja Homa and the Pani Grahana, all the different steps of the wedding, that Agni is called the Grihya Agni. And one aspect is that I've tended to see this aspect done in South India, where they maintain the fire and offer the first grains of rice in the first opasana offering. I'm not sure if it's practiced as commonly in the north, but I'm not too familiar.
So, I would like you to send me any short write-up there might be about this. But this also reminds me that somebody once told me that sannyasi was supposed to carry fire from one place to another while traveling. And because fire represents burning all the impurities or whatever. But then it became impractical, and that is when they adopted the saffron robes, because that looks like fire.
I see. Interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, it's, maybe there is connection there.
Maybe. One interesting other thing about this ritual of opasana is apparently it's common to all castes. And I think one thing we can be in danger of in discussions of dharma is kind of often adopting a very, maybe a Brahmin-centric or a high caste-centric discussion about these things. But everyone who has a fire at their wedding ceremony technically there is a option, I think it's fallen out of use now, but this concept of the fire that represents the energy behind their partnership and maintaining it through mutual effort, it's a kind of universal concept that one can appreciate as well.
I think that's beautiful. I would like to know exactly what that is. And as I said, I haven't seen it. I've done wedding rituals myself, right? But I haven't seen that. So,
sure.
Well, so now are you ready for the prayers? Sonali, you go first.
Sure. So I have so many favorite prayers, but I think the one that I chose for today is Om Triambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushti Vardhanam Urvarukam Iva Bandhana Mrityur Mukshi Amamritat. And I think the reason that resonates with me is just the around the theme of surrender. And I think the most beautiful line from that translates to, you know, when your time comes, when it is time for you to leave this earth, you know, can the transition be as seamless as a ripe vegetable coming off the vine? And I think it's just such a beautiful analogy with such a, you know, there's no way to encapsulate that, you know, with, you can use all these high-minded words, but that simple act of a ripe vegetable coming loose is, you know, I just think it's one of the most beautiful lines in all of our scriptures.
Absolutely. Wonderful. And Ranjan, you want to recite your favorite one?
Yeah, so I think we've talked a lot about the Gayatri Mantra and how it's a very unique prayer in Hinduism. And most people are very familiar with the meaning of the Gayatri Mantra of illuminating our intellect towards something greater than ourselves. But one really interesting version of this Gayatri Mantra that many of the audience may not have heard is the Gayatri Sama. So I'm fortunate to have learnt some of the Samaveda, which is the oldest musical tradition, one could say, perhaps in the world, certainly in India. All the mantras that we find in the other Vedas, especially the Rig Veda, often have a counterpart in the Samaveda. And this really links for me with the concept of nada yoga or nada brahma, you know, the idea that sound can give a meaning beyond just the words. And the unique thing about Samaveda is that it adds a tune to the words and it also adds other syllables to the words. So I'll recite the Gayatri Sama for you and give you a little taster of how the Samaveda recitation of mantras sounds. Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om Om Namah Samavedaya Tat Savitur Vareniyom Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yo Nah Pracho Him Dayo Beautiful. That is a Samved way of reciting Gayatri Mantra. Can you do the non-Samvedic way for people to know the difference? Sure, yeah. So there are different ways in different parts of India. So the one I'm going to recite is the Shukla Yajurveda style. But in North India, the Krishna Yajurveda style is what I'm going to recite. In North India, they recite in the Shukla Yajurveda style, which is subtly different. But this is the Krishna Yajurveda style anyway. Om Bhur Bhuvasubaha Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yo Nah Prachodayat. Om.
Wonderful. And you know, I should remind the audience that Ranjan was born and brought up in UK. So it is possible to be able to pronounce intonate and wonderful chanting of our scriptures, our mantras. So Ranjana Sonali, I really, really appreciate your taking the time for this interview. And I'm sure I'll take you up on another occasion on many other topics that are possible. Once again, you've been listening to Radio Naira, Know Your Dharma program under the auspices of both Radio Naira and Hindu Society of North Carolina. Thank you. Goodbye. Namaste and Hari Om.